Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
What's up, and welcome to another episode of Not Even D2, the podcast covering D3 basketball through conversations with those involved in Division 3. I'm super excited for this episode because it's with the first guest strictly representing the women's side of Division 3 basketball. Hear from Alfred women's basketball coach Mike Moskowitz about his coaching career, the current Alfred team, and why it's so vital for his players to excel in the classroom. Super interesting conversation we have with Coach Moss, so let's get into the episode. Got Coach Mosk in the building. Super excited to have you on, Coach.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Cage.
Yes, sir. How you feeling today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. We're on the recruiting trail, so yes, grinding, sir. Grinding for sure.
So do you use, like, break to approaching Christmas break? Do you use break to start recruiting, or is it like a...
Yeah, so our recruiting cycle is different than a lot of other sports, so we kind of keep open eyes and ears for, especially local, like, and local here, I guess, within 2 hours, Buffalo, Rochester, a little bit of Section 4, and then Northern PA, that kind of thing. So we keep open eyes and ears all through their high school career. But a lot of, like, the main identification of student-athletes who want to pursue would be starting really in April of their junior year. And so heavy AAU from April through July, basically. And then we do some visits, overnight visits, and then go watch them in maybe some fall sports and watch them in high school basketball. So right now, every night this week and just about every night next week while we're off, I'll go to a different high school game, and those are high school seniors that we're recruiting while also, like I said, keeping open eyes and ears for the underclassmen.
Yeah. We'll get into your recruiting styles and things of that nature regarding recruiting, but right now I want to hear about what inspired you to become a coach, specifically on the girls' side of things.
Yeah, so let's take you way back. So both my parents were in business, and I remember when I was young, I have an older sister, so she was in Sunday school, religious school, and my mom had to kind of fill in for 1 year and teach, and I remember going with her when I was very young, and I could see that my mom absolutely loved it. Maybe not like the religion aspect, but the classroom presence. And I remember her saying or alluding to, like, I should have been a teacher. Like, I wanted to be a teacher. And so I don't know if that was actually said. I was so young. I don't know if that was actually said or if I just picked up on it. And so that was always in the back of my head. I had a really awesome fifth grade math teacher that kind of clicked. And it was like, okay, like, I want to be a math teacher. So I went through, that was the plan from literally fifth grade all the way through, did internship in high school, that kind of stuff. Was able to like co-teach some lessons, et cetera. Went to school to be a math teacher. Made some immature decisions my freshman year. Didn't prioritize class time. Fell behind in math, which is very difficult to fall behind in. Readjusted and went for Spanish ed. While I was there, I got to be a student assistant at Oneonta State on the men's side under Vince Medici. That was really cool. At the age of 20, I became a JV girls coach, which is, you know, pretty young. I was interviewing for a modified boys position, and they were like, well, you know, we have a JV girls spot open. And I'm like, I've never coached women before. And I was immature and naive and was like, I never want to coach women. And the JV level is too high. I'm only 20. I've never been a head coach before. And we went through the process, and Matt Osborne and Brandy Backus were like, no, like, we want you to be. And I had a binder and all that stuff prepared through, you know, the coaching certification at Oneonta. And they were like, we want you to be the JV girls coach. And I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. Absolutely loved it. 2 years, small school, got to do open gyms in the off season, local AAU stuff, and help Brandy, you know, continue her success in that program. And so that was the first, I guess, time working with female athletes ever, and kind of broke down my brain barrier of what that would be like. And then my last year of college, as is typical in New York State, a teacher wanted the coaching job, and I was not a teacher, so they just automatically got it based on their contract. So I got booted very, very late. I went back to Coach Medici on the men's side at Oneonta and said, hey, like, do you have anything for me? And he let me do more hands-on work last year of college with the men's team. When I was graduating, I got a job south of Albany, like halfway between Albany and home, at Kingston as a middle school Spanish teacher. And when I was looking, I was like, do I want to go and coach like a modified or a freshman or JV or anything like that? I was like, no, like, I think I want to stay in college. So I emailed both the men's and women's coach at SUNY New Paltz, Division III there. The men's coach said, sorry, we're full. The women's coach brought me in for like a five-hour interview just for a volunteer spot. And that's when I knew, like, I was in the right program. I spent 3 years there while I was teaching full-time. And although my title said volunteer, I basically, because I started to know that this is what I wanted to do, Jamie Seward, the head coach there, invested in me and made sure I had every opportunity to do everything I needed to go from there as a volunteer to a head coach here.
Yeah. So at SUNY New Paltz, you were the assistant or slash volunteer, and you won two SUNYAC titles and one Sweet 16 appearance in the NCAAs. What did you take as an assistant that impacted or influences your decision to become a head coach and what you do as a head coach?
If I didn't go to New Paltz and work under Jamie there, then I would be much different today. Just the competition level. When I was, I was young, but before I went there, the day before a game in my mind was like walkthrough stuff and light shooting reps, and that was it because you don't want to get hurt. Mm-hmm. Everything there is cutthroat. And he's the exact opposite. Like, we need to be our sharpest, play our hardest for a short spurt of time the day before a game. So that kind of flipped everything there. Helping people deal with discomfort and being comfortable, being uncomfortable, and not just with regards to basketball, but pushing them to pursue things outside of basketball, pursuing excellence in everything you do, and really investing in the people and the relationships. Like that those 3 years felt like 10 years in a great way. I learned a lot from both Jamie and Darren Jackson, who's been there for years and years and years, and they just have a lot of knowledge and obviously a really successful program.
Yeah. Going back to something you talked about earlier, you were bouncing between the men's side of things and the women's side of things. What differences do you see in the style of play or just basketball in general?
The game's a little bit different, right? And I think that the biggest thing, for the most part, now we did play SUNY Canton, and Natalie Bartle is very, very good. She'll be an All-American. But for the most part, like, you need to facilitate through each other. You need all five on the court, whereas, you know, on the men's side, more often, you could just put the ball in one person's hands and they can go get you something, versus in the women's side, you need all five working together. And I think also, to be honest with you, like, some of that is like defensive discipline type stuff and a little bit more attention to detail at times. But overall, like, all the stereotypes and the naive mindset, I've been doing this now 6 years here, 3 years at New Paltz, 2 years as a JV coach, so over 10 years, like, that's all. It's you're coaching athletes, right? And so it's a matter of the environment and, I guess, the culture that you create and promote on a daily basis. And so we are super competitive and physical, and I'm sure there are men's programs that aren't, you know, hitting as hard as we are in practice, and that's just a matter of the environment that we create.
Yeah, I've never really heard anyone put it like that, but that's a great analysis on the individuality that you see on the men's side versus on the women's side. But transitioning into a different topic, the past few years, both of your teams have led the conference in three-point field goals made. And I want to hear about, do you think that you recruit players based off of the strengths of your past year's teams, or what are you looking for in your recruiting style?
So I think, given the way that we want to play, we're always looking for like long athletic players and people that we can help develop skill-wise. So they might be a decent ball handler, they might be a decent shooter, they might just be long and a good athlete who can defend and you know, be a good slasher. So those are constants. If we can get long athletes, like, that fits what we do. But this year actually is different than really any other year that we've recruited for. So we inherited a little bit of a traditional roster where we did have some bigs. And so I was trying to play fast, to press, to switch a lot of things, et cetera, with the group that we inherited. But we had talent in pieces that that were already here. And so we had to play through them a little bit. Then once we got into, you know, a few years in and we had all players that we had recruited, we loved playing small ball. And I think that it worked and it sped some teams up, et cetera. But we saw some downfall defensively where there were just times that teams totally abandoned, you know, who they were to just throw it in and make us double or dig the post, whatever it may be, and have to be in rotation every possession. And, you know, so kind of balancing a little bit of my pride and how I really want to play versus what I know will be successful in the league. So this year we're a little bit more traditional. We're a little bit more balanced. But I think overall, to answer your question, I think it's really shallow, I guess, maybe, to just recruit like how you want to play versus finding talented players and adjusting and adapting along the way. So we're going, like right now, we technically have in five or six sets. Three of them are to get the ball inside. Last year, we had one the whole year that was to get it inside, and it was to get it inside to a 5-5, 5-6 guard that was a little bit stronger. So kind of adapting. We have some things coming out of break that we'll put in that'll help us with our balance. But just finding talented people that not only fit what I want to do, what we want to do, but the university, right? So Division III, we're trying to find people who, you know, who want to be here at Alfred University, want to be in Alfred, New York, mesh well with the team. And so their talent levels will vary, their skill set will vary. And so then when we get into basketball as the secondary, my job is to put out the most successful product, basketball product, as possible. And so if we were just to run and gun and press and trap all over and lose every game 70-40 because of that, that would be, you know, really shallow and me kind of saying like, why are you not doing what we always do? Like, I can't stand that. So you have to be adaptable, I think, while still trying to find pieces that will help your program play at least somewhat the way that you want to play. So like right now we're switching 1-4. In years past, we switched 1-5 almost exclusively.
Yeah. You mentioned something about people that want to be in Alfred, New York, and Alfred isn't the, end quote, most luxurious, end quote, place to go to college. How do you try to sell Alfred as a comfortable and the best fit for a girl looking forward to college?
So my recruiting strategy has evolved, and that was, you know, like, that's a well-known thing, honestly, coming in as a new coach to hear. It's talked about, like, in the interview process. It's questioned by other coaches on the committee, and then it comes to fruition as you get your feet on the ground. So I was at New Paltz. We were really successful recruiting, like, the Long Island Capital District, Westchester, New York City. Coming out here, like, I had connections there, and I was like, all right, like, let's keep rolling. But it's, you know, you're 4.5 hours away now from all of those places. So you'll find, you know, players like yourself, like Jaden Chesbury, Dore, Sam Fisher from Poughkeepsie, the other two from the Capital Region, generally speaking. Like, you'll find those players, but you can't put all your eggs into that basket. Mm-hmm. So kind of adjusting in that regard. And then another thing that has evolved as I've gone on, I try and get every student athlete and or their parents on the phone early in the process. Like, we're going to be open and upfront, and I'm going to tell it like it is, which we always did, but like, I'm going to be really upfront with it. So if I find them or start really talking to them in April, May, like, by the end of May, I need them on the phone to the point where they can make a decision, like, I want to go forward with Alfred or I don't. Whereas at, you know, at New Paltz and a little bit at Oneonta when I helped on the front end of recruiting, like, you're just trying to keep them engaged for long enough to stay in the fight. And that's what we did a little bit here. And so we would finish early in my career. We finished, you know, like top three to like an RPI, but it was a Capital Region kid. So they were probably never coming here, but, you know, like, oh, we finished to RPI and Hamilton. And there's another one where it's like, oh, like, wow, cool. We finished top three. And it's like, probably weren't really getting that kid. And yeah, connections built helped us in that regard, but more so like trying to find right fit, being upfront, telling it exactly like it is, getting them in touch with players, getting them here for a visit earlier. We used to not do visits during the summer because it is a ghost town, right? Yeah. We make up a lot of the population in the town is the college students. So Now it's like, let's have that conversation. If they're interested, I'm like, yeah, sure, then let's get them on like an academic tour over the summer. And there, we have enough local players or players that stay here over the summer that somebody can talk to them usually, and then set up that overnight for early fall. Whereas when I first came, it was like, all right, like engage, show your face, talk to them at an AAU tournament, text, and then don't really like buckle up to get them here until, you know, like September, or late August when the kids are back. And I think that that's evolved. So being really upfront, telling it like it is, having them ask those questions, talking to them like, are you looking for something like this? And if you're not, and it's May, and you say no, that's okay. Yeah. And it saves both of our time versus dragging it along, hoping, oh, maybe they'll change their mind. And, you know, they don't mind the quiet, or they don't mind being X number of hours from home. Like, let's be as upfront as possible. And then if they say no and something changes later, we can always reengage. But the chances of somebody being like, I'm not really sure in, let's say, April or May, and changing to like, yes, that's definitely what I wanted and I didn't think I did earlier, like, that's not very high. So kind of filtering out earlier and cutting our list earlier, and then investing that time and energy into a smaller list has yielded a higher rate for us.
Yeah, I respect that. Let's take a quick break. Last season, your team had a program high in conference wins at 10 wins in the Empire 8. What are the current goals for this team and trying to build off of last season?
So we learned early in our tenure here that focusing on the end goal, our second year, we talked about like we want to make playoffs. We put so much pressure on ourselves. We were, a young program in this process of rebuilding. We put so much pressure on ourselves that every game felt like do or die, and it, like, not in a good way. Not in like, let's go out and compete as hard as we can. Just like, oh my God, that basket's going to cost us postseason spot that we've been talking about nonstop. So we year three, we went back to our roots and just said, like, let's be better tomorrow than we were today, and let's be better at the end of today than we were when we woke up. So that's really what we focus on. I mean, it was awesome to make the playoffs for the first time ever in program history. That was really good. Most wins in over 25 years. That was awesome. But focusing on the end goal is not like who we are and what we do so much as like we got to grade ourselves. We got to look each other in the, you know, in the face, in the circle at the end of practice and in the locker room after the game. Like, what can we improve on? But how did, like, what was our effort like? What was our communication life like? What was our cohesion like? All that kind of stuff. So literally, and it's corny, cheesy, but we say it nonstop, like, you're building your house every day and you got to get better every day, get 1% better every day, and it'll add up over time. So yeah.
I don't look at that as cheesy at all. Like, you got to have that constant improvement if you want to make some noise in the Empire 8, and that's what I want to hear from right now. You're currently 3-5, 0-2 in the conference. What does this team need to improve on or stay consistent with to make some noise in the Empire 8 and hopefully make playoffs again?
I think the coaching staff has to continue to evaluate and, find and develop two things. Like, our rotation, we're still working through that. We really only return three pieces that have played consistent minutes in their career. So we have 11 players that are either new to the program, haven't seen much time previously, and or have been hurt here for some time. So we are only 8 games in to a long journey. And so I've tried to preach that to them. Like, we're trying to figure things out. Like, what do we do best? I have that conversation with myself every day, with my peers, with our coaches, with my father, etc. Like, what are we best at? To be determined. Like, we're working through it. There are things that we do well, but not consistently enough. So that's probably number one is rotations. And then number two would be consistency across the board, and trying to find who we are and do that as much as possible. So we're working through that. And with that, you know, we've had some offensive struggles. Our defense has been pretty good to really good. But offensively, we've been struggling to find consistent looks. Like, we played a really good Houghton team the other day, and I thought our offense was pretty good, but their ball pressure, you know, really affected us, and their physicality on the ball affected us and didn't let us get crisp through some sets. We're working on some structures within, like I said, we'll be adding stuff here just about every week as we come out of the break, different sets and quick hitters and stuff like that. But just an evolving thing here. And I think the thing that we have to focus on we collectively, while the coaching staff works on the behind the scenes stuff, is our work ethic, our ball movement, our communication. Those need to be consistent every day. And so if we can do that, then I like our chances. And I know that we have a group that'll do that for us.
Yeah. As a coach, how hard is it to balance what you previously expected this team to be, what sets you're going to run, to when it doesn't work to the best of what you thought it was? How much are you going to wait to see, like, what works and what doesn't work?
I had a really early lesson here in the collegiate field. Second year, we were running some similar sets to what we ran the first year that we had some success with that group that we inherited, where we played a little bit inside. It was probably about halfway through conference play the second year. We played Houghton, who was not as good as they are now, and Naz, who's been consistently good back-to-back. And off the top of my head, I think we scored like 2 points and 3 points in the first quarter of each of those games.
Damn.
And that, I had to swallow my pride. And it was, I was a lot more immature then, and I like to think I've developed as a person. But at the time, in the moment, it's like, we are not running these crisp enough. We're not having good reads, et cetera. The reality was people were sitting on what we were running, right? And they knew, and league play, like everybody knows what you run. You just got to run it better. And swallowed our pride, scrapped everything within the offense, wow. Everything. And we were halfway through conference play, so we were probably 18 games into the year. Totally scrapped it and went to something brand new, started on a Monday with something brand new, and that Friday, I don't remember the results, but started to do well, and we won like 4 of our last 5 that year. So I got that humbling, you know, lesson really early, and so that's allowed me here to kind of evaluate maybe some things that we did last year or things that I expected to work this year that haven't or aren't as efficient. Like, do we need to add more stuff so that they become less predictable? Or do we need to scrap it or go to it once a game or go to it in the big moments, whatever it may be? And also evaluate, like I said, and I haven't had to do this that much in years past, but like, who's on the court? And so therefore, what do we want to run as a group of five? Whereas in years past, you would evaluate who's on the court, but mostly we had interchangeable pieces. Like, we had similar pieces that we just kind of plugged in. Whereas here it's like, all right, we're a little bit bigger with this lineup. We're a little bit quicker with this lineup. We have more shooters with this lineup. We got to play with two bigs. I haven't played with two bigs since our second year. So evaluating that, and like I said, I learned that lesson really early on, but you just got to swallow your pride sometimes as a coach, because it would be really stubborn to keep, you know, bashing your head against the wall saying, like, this should work, this should work, this should work. And I know, you know, there are some peers out there and myself earlier in my career who it's like, the players aren't doing blah, blah. It doesn't matter. The players are out there playing, so I need to put them in a better position to succeed.
Yeah, that's crazy. And are there any coaches that you have always enjoyed competing against, or a coach that has always had your number that you'd like to get the best of coming up?
So obviously St. John Fisher, they've been at the top of the league here since I've been here. We've been close. We've given them some good runs. We've had the lead at some halftime, so we definitely, you know, got to get over that hump and take them down. They're the top dog. But thinking about this, I guess I'd say, just out of my true admiration and respect for how they run their program, Nazareth. We COVID year, we should have beat them at our place in an empty gym. We an unfortunate series of events that we probably blew the game. And then we did beat them 2 years ago. And then this past year, if you remember, we had that tough block charge call that ultimately, when you stop the film, it was the wrong call, but live, I didn't hate. It was a really difficult call. But like, that's fun, and I'm proud that we're ascending to compete with them. You know, I really respect Kelly and her whole staff. You know, she's got a slew of former players, her brother Tim. They do an awesome, awesome job, and I just love conversing with them, picking their brain on the road, the recruiting trail, all that kind of stuff. So they're probably the most fun, and I know that we have to be at the top of our game to compete with them consistently.
Yeah, talking about that block charge, I just wanted to hear from a coach's perspective. You're a high-energy guy, and sometimes refs make the bad call or a call you disagree with. How do you balance when is the right time to show that energy and when's the time to like keep your team composed and keep a level head?
2 years ago, the first two games, so it was a year coming out of COVID, the first two games I got warnings. I've never gotten a tech at the college level. I only got them at the JV level, but they were warranted because those refs were terrible. But I got my first two warnings, and they were back-to-back. And so I knew, like, yes, you're right. I am high energy. I don't stop talking, whether it's communicating to the players or getting on the refs. But that kind of was a self-reflection of, like, you got to be investing too much time in stuff you can't control. And I remember reflecting, like, soon after that, because it was like you're basically embarrassing yourself and your team for how much you're getting after the refs. Like, self-reflecting that week after, looking back, I don't remember who it was. I want to say it was Morrisville. Like, I was – or no, Cobleskill. I can't remember. I literally was, like, had blacked out mentally and was in this tunnel vision of all I remember was getting on the refs, and there's a stretch of the game I don't remember the basketball.
Wow.
And that's, like, actually crazy to think about. Luckily, our team kind of held it together, and I think we won that game. But just the fact – like, my job is to coach the sport, and I – couldn't, because my mind wouldn't let me do it for like 7 minutes of basketball, which is crazy. So I try and, I guess, put all my energy into the players. I've definitely gotten a lot more mature on the sidelines and not been as emotional as I have in previous years, especially with this team, trying to just like make sure, like, coach them, help them, because we are young, but more so like inexperienced, even with some of the pieces that we have had here and or other people taking on bigger roles. So like, Don't be as emotional. Don't be as reactive as you have been in years past. That's a part of growing up as is. But also with the refs, like, the conversations across the court consistently are not benefiting us, because while they may hear what you're saying, they're also getting a little bit impatient with your antics. So more so, like, when you need to, you can let them know that they've messed up and explain why you think so. But when they come over to have a conversation to quiet you down, calm you down, and they want to talk to you, you have to respect the heck out of that, because there are times that the refs will say, like, I missed that one. You were right. And there will be other times that they say, this is what I had and this is why I had it. And I'm like, okay, you're right. And so that's been a development of, like, the energy is great. It's awesome. But you can't embarrass yourself, the team, and the ref, really, because that's not going to pay off in the end. And realistically speaking, we see the same people, right, because of the area that we're in, and they are trying that, you know, there's nobody that I think is not trying their hardest, and that's just collecting a paycheck or anything, because our ref coordinator Mike Schmidt holds them to a really high standard. So understanding, like, it's a difficult thing to do. I've done it before. It's a difficult thing to do. They're trying their best, and you're going to see them again in a week and a half. So if you're just nonstop getting after them, nonstop, you're going to burn some bridges, and it's not going to benefit you in the end. And I don't know that that's the reality, and the refs will probably say that's not the reality, but even just their patience and their willingness to have a conversation, like, in the end, we're adults, we can disagree, and it doesn't always have to be across the court at a high volume.
Yeah, I respect that, and especially because you're practicing what you're preaching to your team of that constant growth and improving every day, because even just observing you from my freshman year to now, I can see definitely that, like, you've matured, like you said, and you don't get as, like, and you're just, like, level-headed. And I think that's definitely a great aspect of your coaching style right now.
Thank you.
So moving forward into a different topic, non-related to basketball, kind of, but you've changed the culture in Alfred Women's Basketball Program to where your students are excelling in the classroom. Every semester since you've been here, team average above a 3.0 GPA. Why is it so important to you that your players are being productive in the classroom?
So when I got here, the program was in, obviously, a poor spot basketball-wise. 2 wins the year before we got here and 8 wins over the 3 years before we got here. So the basketball product was really struggling. But getting to know them, like, in the interview process and then immediately, like, there was minimal accountability, but also minimal structure. And I have some OCD in me, but, like, I'm somebody who likes to structure things out and provide support and means for growth and for all that kind of stuff. And so if I'm going to hold people accountable and the department's going to hold people accountable and the NCAA, like, then I got to help them, because I, like I told you earlier, like, I was a freshman and part of my sophomore year where I was a lot more focused on everything but going to class, because I was 17, 18, 19 as well. So trying to be upfront with them, that's talked about on the recruit call. And when they come here, showing them where all the resources are, telling them exactly what their purpose is, et cetera. Like, That's the stuff that matters, because you're going to struggle, whether it be physical health, mental health, academics, balance, struggling within the basketball program, your shot's not, whatever it may be. Like, we have all different resources and opportunities around us. And I think that if we're providing them as a university, shame on me if I'm not promoting them nonstop and or mandating them in some way, shape, or form. So with regards to academics, it started the first 2 years with like progress report type sheets. Every 2 weeks, Friday afternoon, by whatever it was, Friday at 4 p.m., I needed the sheet in my mailbox, signed by all your professors with a grade and comments. That became a little bit mundane for the professors, especially in COVID. So we instead, now we meet every other week in my office, 15 minutes, no basketball will be discussed. You're going to pull up Canvas, which is their, you know, like, I guess, school website type thing, where it shows them upcoming assignments and grades. And you're going to show me and read to me, and I'm going to log it, and I'm going to mark it, color coordinate it, add comments, all that kind of stuff. And then that allows me to follow up, as opposed to, like, the first 2 years, they would drop it in the mailbox. We had one that would drop it in the mailbox and run away and hope that I didn't hear. I'd be like, hey, come back here. This a lot, like, let's have a conversation, because I struggled and it took me a while to get my feet on the ground and really focus and prioritize. So to have that structure, all 4 years, you could be a 4.0 student, you could be a grad student, you could be a freshman, doesn't matter. You'll have to do that. And just providing structure so that there, like, there's no secret that we went from under a 3.0 before we got here to a 3.41 average over 6 years, right? So that's not like we're not bringing in geniuses. Not everybody's perfect. We do have people that struggle through, but like if a B minus is the best you can do in that anatomy class, like, we are going to get, you know, that 82.49, and they're not going to round up, but you know what I mean? Like, that's what we're going to do. And I'm going to ask you, like, what are you doing about it? Have you met with the professor? Are there SI sessions? Can you go into peer tutoring? Do you need to go to the writing center? Do you need something from me? Do you need a quiet place? Do you need to come late to practice because you need to do whatever it may be? And really, like, overemphasize that. And not, I think it's important not to have the students feel guilty about academic things potentially conflicting with basketball. And that'll help with the longevity of them in the program too. Yeah. Like, it's not a hollow, like, hey, yeah, like, academics are important. Like, every single day there's something I'm doing or our staff is doing to help support them academically and or career-wise, internships, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love that. Kudos to you and your coaching staff for keeping your students locked in on something bigger than basketball, because at the end of the day, 99% of Division III players aren't going to go professional for this, so definitely got to find other ways to be successful.
Right, and that's something that I learned from Jamie, like, at New Paltz. He always said, like, this stuff's cool, it's awesome to be a part of, you're being a part of something bigger than yourself, but he's like, I want to hear about, you know, down the road when you get that job, when you buy your first house, when you buy a car, when you graduate advanced schooling from here, when you get married, when you have kids and the kids are calling you like Uncle KJ or whatever it may be. What was really cool is last summer, I got to experience that for the first time. I went to my first ever New Paltz wedding, got invited, and to see, we had two tables. It was just like getting the gang back together. Like, I'm excited for that over the next few years here at AU.
Full circle, for real. And I like the sound of Uncle KJ, so shout out little bro Isaiah, tap in. But we're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire and starting five edition. Let me know when you're ready for rapid fire.
All right, let's do this.
All right. Do you have a favorite quote?
I used to always be quotes. But I guess something that I shared with the team recently, it's not going to be a direct quote, but Kara Lawson, head coach at Duke Women's Basketball, yeah, she just, the general idea that it doesn't get easier, you just handle hard better.
That is tough. I got a quote list, so that's going in my quote list. But next one, most funny player on the current team.
Well, Leah and Felicia's laugh and Kate Quinn's laugh will just get you anytime. The actual Bree Dorr, sneaky funny. Natalie Collins, sneaky funny. Let's see. Am I missing anybody?
So your freshmen are carrying the locker room vibes?
There are some characters, yeah. I'll stick with those. I think I'll give Bree Dorr, like, the sneaky, like, when she when she talks, like, you better listen because you're missing either something really, really important, really educational, and well-balanced, or something hysterical.
I got you. And then last rapid-fire question. Do you watch the WNBA?
I do.
All right. So who's your favorite player?
I love the Aces, top to bottom. Becky Hammon. No. Love them. Asia Wilson, I think, is just a stud. Chelsea Gray is just ridiculous passer. And just, like, the flow that they have. And, you know, Jackie Young and Kelsey Plum. Like, they're just a lot of fun on both sides of the court. So I've never really been a big, you know, who's your favorite player that's not on your favorite team type thing. So, like, I feel like the generations today, they just kind of follow their player. Like, I'm loyal to my team, and then we'll still support them, but always loyal to the team. And as I've gotten to watch more and more the last few years, just love everything top to bottom that the Aces do.
I got you. I'm a Liberty fan, so we got beef now.
Yeah. And, like, when I was younger, like, obviously New York, you know, loved the Liberty, but watching more consistently before the Liberty were good, it was the Aces because it was really high quality, and I was learning every second from the players and the coaches.
I got you. So this Starting Five edition is going to be the top five players that you've coached, but we're going to leave off of the current team. So everybody you've coached besides members of your current team, if you were a coach, who's your Starting Five?
Okay. So I got one. Let's see. And as you know, like, we don't do positions, so I got five. They kind of fill out the positions, but I really got 3 point guards, which I love. All right, so we'll start with a New Paltz OG that came in when I got in there, Lindsay Betke. We called her LB, and I remember we were at Brockport. The team was – we were doing okay, but she was a freshman, and she could absolutely put the ball in the hoop multiple ways, was struggling with defensive concepts. We were struggling a little bit as a team, but not, like, terrible. And I had written on the clipboard that I was tracking stats on the backside. I had a clear clipboard, and I wrote, free LB, like, play her. And I think I showed it to her that game. She went in, somebody was hurt or somebody was in foul trouble, and just went for, like, 18 or something like that.
Wow.
And speaking to her somewhat recently, she still has that free LB sign, you know, like, hung up, and she went on to be an all-conference player and all that kind of stuff. So she just a lot of fun, and it was really cool to come in with her, learn with her, and then be there 3 years, and then watch her the year after I left. Was really awesome. Now the next is a duo, Al and Carly, Allison O'Toole and Carly Welty. Carly just like probably the toughest kid ever. We're really proud for her. She graduated early in 3 years from here. Was supposed to come back this year for her master's. She's in the New York State Trooper Academy right now and, you know, doing pretty well. Saw her a few weeks ago at the Elmira game. Her sisters play for them. And just a great, great, great family. Was probably, honestly, our top recruit we've ever had here. And so when we got her during COVID, that was a very, very, very exciting time. And then Al, similar to Lindsay at New Paltz, Al came in with me. So I didn't recruit her. Coach Luke recruited her for softball, and she was interested in playing basketball. I get the job in April. Coach Rachel Durbin was here as the graduate assistant, kind of holding the program together. She said, here are some kids that we got to reach out to that may be interested. And I called Allison after I'd watched some tape that Coach Luke had sent me. And I'm like, Allison, like, we need you. Like, you have a high chance of playing here right away, but more so, like, it seems like you really love, like, the sports. I spoke to her for maybe like a half hour. I remember I was in the car, and I knew. I was like, this program's in trouble because Allison and I are similar in a lot of ways. and so just an ultimate competitor, an ultimate glue type piece, would hold her teammates accountable. Had a little bit of a flash in her that we had to pull back at times when she was turning it over, but really excelled. And she's somebody who, you know, we joked her first year, and it actually, we had a conversation about how it wasn't good for her performance, but we joked about, like, are you going to have a higher batting average or a higher 3-point percentage? And her 3-point percentage her first year was not very good. But to watch her, like, develop into a quality basketball player, a really, really good leader, and somebody that played both sides of the floor, and then her and Carly to both be 5'5", 5'6", and literally guard centers every night, but then bring the ball up, but post up guards, all that kind of stuff. Like, they made it a lot of fun, and two of my favorites. Let's see. We have a player called named MVP, Maddie Van Pelt from New Paltz. She was a walk-on. This is funny, and I'll be sure to send her this. She might not know this. She's now an assistant there. She, when we watched her film, I was like, nah, like she doesn't really do anything. Come to find out that was her game. It's like she didn't really do anything until she did something, developed into a player, and she became all-conference. So she went from a volleyball athlete that wanted to play basketball, a local kid. And I was like, yeah, like, you know, she's athletic, but what basketball skills does she have? And then just like every day got better, got better, got better. She was the type of kid when early in her career, you had to find minutes for her. Like she just did things right. And she kind of, like, I think she's a way better athlete, but she reminds me of our Jada Felker now. Like I had this conversation with Jada recently. It's hard not to have you on the floor. Like you do too many things right, and you're a nice complimentary piece. And so hopefully Jada's trajectory is similar to MVP. But she was a lot of fun, quiet competitor who developed a voice, who developed basketball skill over the years. And then the last one is somebody that when I went in to New Paltz, she was a junior. So we were actually pretty close in age. But right away she had a respect. Like she was the second voice of the team. We had a great leader in Goldie Harrison then, but the second voice of the team and probably the best player. And right away she had like a respect for me, like would ask me certain things, would ask if I needed certain things as I was learning. And her name is Kit Small. She's from the Albany area. And just like fierce, fierce, fierce competitor. Like every day when you kept score on the scoreboard, if her team didn't win, you just don't talk to Kit, like don't. And would do whatever it took, you know, kind of played with an edge, but played clean, whatever it took to get herself and her team past the finish line. So all these little team challenges on and off the court, or if it's, you know, blue versus white in that gym, you know, Kit's winning percentage was probably off the charts. And she was a big part of getting that program to, you know, the pinnacle of success. And her impact is felt every day. And what I respect more about Kit is like she's heavily involved in that program from afar. Everybody still knows who she is. And as much as she can, you know, she tries to go back because she loved being a Hawk and she loved playing for Coach Seward and all that. So that's a five that I'll go to war with for sure. And I'll have a lot of fun coaching.
That's a tough team. I respect it. But that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We appreciate your time, Coach, and good luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks, KJ. Same to you. Excited for the next few months.
Yes, sir.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed-sponsored jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed-sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.